Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Postpartum Therapist Podcast. Today, I have a special guest with us, Katrina. Katrina has volunteered to be here with us and share her experience, so we are very grateful. Katrina is a coworker of mine turned friend. We've been working together for 7 years, going on 8. She is very talented, especially in the kitchen. She is a beautiful and wonderful baker, to the point where I have asked her to make cupcakes for my wedding and any other events that I've had. She's my go-to gal. I've invited her today because she has a very unique story to share. She is a person with an autoimmune disorder and has also experienced having a NICU baby and several complications regarding pregnancy and experience. So I would like to invite Katrina. I'm going to have her introduce herself and get into her story. All right, Katrina, go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Jasmine. Again, like she said, my name's Katrina. I am a mom of 2 little ones. I have lupus, which definitely, if you don't know anything about lupus, it's very interesting. It affects different parts of your bodies at different times. And one of the areas that affects me the strongest actually is my reproductive organs. And so having babies was not easy. It was complicated, but I'm so thankful for my 2 little miracles. Like Jasmine said, I've worked with her for just shy of 8 years now, and I'm so glad that she's doing this because I think sharing mom's stories is one of the most important things you can do, to realize that we all can be in it together. It is a little different, but you can take little things. And so I just hope that this blesses somebody who can hear it and pull something and go, you know, I recognize that in myself, and this is how it worked out for her. And, you know, just kind of all those good things that come from sharing stories as mom.
So perfect. So thank you so much. So can you tell our listeners, I know you briefly told me and then I stopped you. I was like, wait, I want to hear it first time. So can you kind of just start with pregnancy? What's that like for somebody with lupus or maybe an autoimmune disorder? I know then when we were briefly talking, you were like, from the onset, it's different. So can we kind of go into that and let us know what your process looks like?
So finding out I was pregnant was a joyous thing, but it immediately prompted me to call my doctor. And, you know, a lot of doctors do the first post, you know, like pregnancy check of like, okay, woohoo, we're pregnant between 6 to 8 weeks. My doctor got me in both times within 24 hours because when I'm not pregnant, I'm on medications to manage my lupus. And so sometimes those medications can have serious pregnancy complications. So we immediately have to go, okay, let's get some baseline labs to see where she's at. Let's do a baseline ultrasound to see where she's at. And then they have to make medication adjustments. And so it's immediately right out of the gate, once a week doctor's appointments. And then I did a once a week doctor's appointment, an ultrasound every other week until I was 16 weeks pregnant. And then I had to start seeing the high risk neonatal specialist. And so that high risk doctor is somebody who only works with high risk pregnancies. And so the labs that they do, the frequency, the ultrasounds, everything is double. So if a regular ultrasound takes 15 minutes, her ultrasounds take 45 minutes to an hour. Every, you know, chamber of the heart and the baby, really getting in there. And so the first 16 weeks, I go once a week, and then I go every other week to the high-risk doctor, once a week to my regular. And then when I hit 27 weeks pregnant, I had to go for twice a week their non-stress test, which a lot of moms have to do them for a lot of different reasons, but being a high-risk autoimmune mom, they really want to watch that baby's fetal heart movement. That's really what they're watching, is the heart. And so I started going at 27 weeks twice a week to my regular OBGYN and once a week to the high-risk specialist. I got labs done once a week and an ultrasound done once a week until I delivered my son at 37 weeks. One of the other things is, because you can have more complications as a high-risk mom, they may send you to the hospital for a checkup a little bit quicker than even a regular mom. So starting at 33 weeks, I ended up going to the hospital typically 2 to 3 times a week to check things, because I, in addition to being a high-risk mom and having to go to the doctors and have all these labs and have ultrasounds all the time, I also developed gestational diabetes and preeclampsia. So I had to monitor my blood sugar 4 times a day. I had to do injections. I had to constantly be in communication with my doctors. It was a rare day that I didn't talk to a doctor at least once a day the second half of my pregnancy.
So can you let us know, when you say high risk, I feel like Yes. We hear that a lot, but what would high risk mean for you? What was the risk? What was the risk to you? What was the risk to your baby?
The risk, when you have an autoimmune disorder, especially, I mean, there's a lot of reasons women can be high risk. For me, having an autoimmune disorder, the risk is that my body wouldn't recognize the baby and my immune system would try to attack the baby, would try to harm the baby. And so the first half is just making sure that my immune system stays in check and doesn't try to attack the baby.
Right.
Is that, okay, the baby's big enough and the baby's drawing all your energy, that the baby's not attacking me. And so we had to constantly watch my kidney levels, my liver function, listen to my lungs a lot, because it could literally put me into a lupus flare, which affects all of my joints. It makes it hard to move. It makes my energy level, which, you know, when you're pregnant, you already don't have an energy level. And so it can just completely deplete it. And one of the things it could do, it could kick me into a bad enough lupus flare to require hospitalization. And so for autoimmune cases, it's this, you have a little foreign alien in your body and your body's like, wait, we're already like a wacky immune system. What's going on here? And to add additional complication for me, I am Rh negative, which means that if my baby had a different blood type, I was already at a higher risk of potentially having a miscarriage in the first 12 weeks. So for me, my body, it's this instant like, okay, we need to monitor this baby, her blood levels and everything all the time and make sure nothing is weird. Try to keep as normal as possible, which isn't easy to do in a regular healthy pregnancy. So when you have somebody with an autoimmune that their body just is going crazy and deciding to do all sorts of weird stuff, it makes it a little bit more complicated right out of the gate. You really have to watch very carefully what's going on in the mom's body.
So how do you manage that? As I'm listening, I'm thinking, okay, she must be a stay-at-home mom, but you are not. You are employed full-time, right?
Yes.
So how do you manage, you know, working full-time, having these appointments, and then managing the emotions with it, and I would assume the fear with it, everything like that? How did that process look like for you?
So for me, it required maybe telling my bosses way earlier than I would have told people, way earlier than I did tell some people, because I needed them to know, like, I will be flexible, but I need some flexibility back. And so luckily I happened to work for some pretty nice bosses who right out of the gate understood and said, hey, do what you need to do, be flexible. So that was thankful. And I know a lot of women don't always have that experience. It is tricky and it is difficult. And managing everything, it's not easy. I wish I could say it was easy, but it's really not. I have seen a therapist for my own personal needs for about the last 7 years now, and she was monumental in helping me manage the emotional side. Having a good support system in terms of employers, friends, and family was really important. I have a daughter who's also a little bit older. And so, you know, sometimes I had to call friends and go, I have a doctor's appointment at this time that I absolutely can't miss. Can somebody go pick her up from preschool? And so I wish I could say I had the answer, the magic answer to managing it all, but I really don't, other than relying on my support system, talking to my therapist, and taking every step one day at a time. There is a great fear, especially when you're have all the little components added together, that something's going to go wrong with the baby. The only thing I could also tell myself, which I don't even know if I've told you this, is my body technically should have never gotten pregnant with either of my children according to blood work before I had my babies. My mother-in-law passed about 2 weeks before I conceived my son, and the family joke in our life is that Nana got to heaven and said, you know, you guys need a little brother to keep you company. I don't know other than that. And so when I was really stressful and I was really anxious, sometimes that's literally all I could tell myself was, well, you know, we're just going to take it a day at a time. And I'm just going to believe that he's supposed to be here because I don't know what else to do. You know, I don't know how else to feel about it, but I just had to, it's that last little hope of like, well, I'm just going to go with, he is supposed to be here because his Nana sent him, right? That's the joke in our family that Nana sent him.
That just gave my whole body chills just thinking about, you know, maybe moments of your day or each night when those fears kind of creep in, you know, just to be like, okay, I'm just going to have to go with some faith here, you know, and that's hard. Yeah. It's hard for any pregnancy, but it's hard when you add so many complications yes. that you've shared yes. and I wouldn't expect you to not have some fear there, right? I think it'd be unrealistic to say, oh, you know, just have faith, right? That's hard. That's challenging.
That's very, very challenging. And so as we moved through the pregnancy, everything kind of leveled out after a little bit, which is great. That's what you want to see. And then we had about 33 weeks and then he was still looking great. Nate was still looking awesome, but my body was starting to reject the pregnancy. My body, I had gestational diabetes. I'm high risk. I'm Rh negative. And now I've added in preeclampsia, which is a fear of all OBGYNs everywhere. It means that your kidneys are potentially shutting down, your blood pressure is sky high, and there is a risk of stroke and seizure. So I had to go to the hospital often and make sure they would do labs, monitor the baby, do the ultrasound, go, okay, everything looks okay. Let's go another day. And it got to the point, we went to the hospital 12 times before we ended up delivering him at the end of the pregnancy to do those, like, is today the day? Okay, today's not the day. Let's go home and make it another day. Is today the day? Nope. And then, yep, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so if I'm doing my math right, you started at the beginning saying he would come at 37 weeks. This started mm-hmm. at 33 weeks. So you're saying in 4 weeks, you had about 12 hospital visits. Would that be right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
That's a lot. So it was just a day by day. Okay. Let's make it another day. Okay. Let's make it another day. And our goal was get that baby cooking as long as possible. And the Monday before I delivered my son, I went in for my non-stress test. I saw my regular OBGYN. She said, I don't like it. I'm not comfortable. And she sent me to the hospital. And they said, no, everything looks okay. Go home. But what she had told me was, I think we need to deliver this baby. So she sent me home and said, I'm in the hospital on Wednesday. I'd like you to come in and see me. I'd like to check you myself. And if you look like you do today, I'm delivering this baby. Tuesday was terrible in between those days. I was awful. I was nauseous. My head was killing me. I could barely walk. I felt awful. And at this point, I was on almost total bed rest. And so I just was like, okay, we just got to make it. Wednesday morning, I got up. I gave my kiddo a kiss goodbye. I went to the hospital. And I was confident she was going to deliver that baby. She took one look at my face and said, we're having a baby. Now, thankfully for me, of all the complications, delivery was not a complication, which I think I needed a win there. You know, I needed a win.
I think I had you deserve that, things. Right?
I deserve
to
win.
You deserve one win, right?
One win. We started the Pitocin at 10 a.m. She broke my water at 11 and he was born at 2:08.
Okay. I'll take it.
I'll take it. It was the win. And it was in terms of delivery, it was a very easy delivery. But what happened after the delivery? Yeah.
What did your doctor find out, though? I remember you telling me, you know, you weren't feeling well and everything. What was actually going on? I remember you telling me, but I want you to share with the listeners. Yep.
So when they delivered him, the pediatrician, one other note to say about high-risk lupus moms, they always have a pediatrician in the room because they want the baby checked instantly. So they luckily, thank goodness, the pediatrician was there. When they pulled out my son, he was gray. And his umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck twice. And there was what was called a true knot. If you haven't ever seen one, Google it. It's very interesting. It was a full and total knot in the umbilical cord. And it was wrapped around his neck twice. And I sat there waiting for the tear, waiting for the cry. You know, that's the thing you hear, right? They clear the nose and then you hear the cry. That's what you're supposed to hear. And we sat there, and what felt like an eternity probably was only a minute. And then he cried. And then I was able to like focus on, you know, doing the rest of what you have to do when you deliver a baby. But they brought him over to me, gave him a kiss, and they instantly rushed him to the hospital nursery. He was very dehydrated. He was not doing well. And so they had to give him through his umbilical stump a instant, like it was called a bolus of fluids to try to revive him because he was limp. He wasn't flailing and screaming like a normal baby. He would whimper. He was breathing, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't very responsive. And so they ended up having to transfer him to our local hospital's NICU. But in the meantime, I'm waiting to get off of, you know, get IVs out of me, and I can't move because I had an epidural. So he's in the nursery and I can't go there. When they could finally get me down to see him, I remember being wheeled in the wheelchair, and he was just pale. And we're waiting at this point for the NICU team. We know the NICU team is coming. He's pale, he's breathing. And as I'm sitting there holding his little hand, I think, I don't know that I told you this, I ended up passing out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
My body just was done, and I passed out. My husband caught me before I hit the floor. And then they had to take me back to the room, and my whole body was just shaking and convulsing. And I had cold sweats, and I was just, it was the weirdest feeling in the entire world. I've never felt anything quite like it. And then they brought him in to me to say goodbye before the NICU team took him. And that next 24 hours was the worst 24 hours of my entire life. It was awful. I was away from my baby. I couldn't get out of bed. I had to have magnesium during my delivery. And so when you have magnesium, it has to run for 24 hours to keep the mom from having a seizure because of the preeclampsia. So I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't move. I wasn't allowed to walk. I had to call the nurse when I needed my chapstick, when he needed anything. And so my husband went with my son to the NICU at the other hospital. And I sat in a room by myself, just not knowing what was going on. And everything in my mom instinct was like, I need to be there with my baby. What is wrong? Right. And I couldn't even get up to get a glass of water if I wanted.
Right.
And So being there pumping by myself. Now, my husband was there and he took great care of him and kept me updated. And that NICU team at the hospital was amazing. They got him a blood transfusion instantly, which turned the course and helped him, you know, almost immediately start to feel better. A couple courses. By the time I got to him the next day, he had had electrolytes and a blood transfusion and lots of fluids. And he was, you know, on the road to recovery. I had to argue with my doctor to let me out of the hospital, keep me for 2 days. And I said, I can't do that. You need to let me out of this hospital now. I need to be with my baby. And so it was this interesting game that the doctor had. I ended up passing out a couple more times. Interesting game of like six hours. I need your blood pressure numbers to be normal and no fainting. And I ended up being out of the hospital at like 6 o'clock the following day. And so I remember going to the hospital. Go ahead, Jasmine.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, so what was the reason for the fainting? Was it loss of blood?
A combination of loss of blood. The pregnancy just took so much out of me. Our bodies were not communicating. That's what his and my body, we were connected, but they weren't communicating. My body wasn't giving him what he needed, and I wasn't getting the feedback. And so a combination of the adrenaline, he's out, blood pressure, blood sugar issues just made it. So I was a lady who couldn't move, but everything in my body was screaming that I needed to not be there. I barely slept that night. I got out of the hospital, went over there, and those NICU nurses took one look at me and said, you can hold him and you can stay, and then we are kicking you out because you need to go home and rest. So NICU nurses are wonderful at that. They make you take care of yourself no matter what, even if you don't want to. And so getting to hold him the first time was the best thing that I've ever experienced. because I wasn't with him and I couldn't know what was going on and I was terrified. And just seeing him and having him open his eyes and look at me, and like that instant, oh, that's Mama. I know this person. And he instantly settled and he instantly calmed.
Right.
Just evaporated so many fears I had. And I didn't want to leave him at all. I was like, nope, I'm never leaving him ever again. I'm staying here forever. But the wonderful nurses did make me leave when I started to get tired, and they made me go home and rest. And then I was up the next morning, and they were wonderful. They took great care of him. They sent me updates, which was great. But the weirdest feeling is leaving a hospital without your baby. And I knew he needed to be there, but man, did I not want to leave. But those nurses, they will make you go eat meals. They will make you go rest. They will make you take care of yourself. Because if you don't, you can't take care of your baby if you don't take care of you. And they really drill that home. And he was in the NICU for 5 days total, had some jaundice, had to be on the lights for a while. We had to come home with a little glowworm baby.
But when you say glowworm baby, what's that look like?
So what that looks like is he spends the time that he's not eating and you get to snuggle him a little. But if he's sleeping, he's on a billy blanket with little goggles on. So he's got these little goggles that are big round goggles. They're, you know, soft and they cover it. Most of his face.
Sure.
And he literally is glowing. He's got a blue light under him wrapped around him with like a blanket, and he's just laying there glowing.
So they send you home with one so you can continue the therapy or the intervention at home. Okay, nice.
So for us, after his blood transfusion, we had a couple weird lab numbers. His calcium and his potassium were doing some weird things, so we had to work with some different IVs to get him under control for that. And then once we got those done, the main thing was the jaundice. And so on the last day he got to come home, the NICU doctor, who was wonderful, said there is zero reason to keep this baby here if this is the only reason I'm keeping this baby here. If you'll agree to get blood draws twice a week for him until your pediatrician clears him, and you'll agree to take him and make sure he stays on that billy blanket, I'll let you go home. And so we had done this before. My first daughter had jaundice, so that wasn't our first rodeo. So he trusted that I would do what needed to be done to have the baby, you know, home and continue getting better. And so it was just the crazy experience. And then I don't know if you've ever been in a NICU at a hospital. A lot of times they have staged rooms. The rooms go kind of from the most medically fragile to almost ready to go. And I was thankful he went in at room 4 of 5. And so we quickly transitioned to the 5th room. And then they sent us over to a special care nursery, which was wonderful. He spent 2 days in there. And that special care nursery only has 2 babies. And so all day she hangs out with, you know, just 2 babies. So she can really take care of them and really focus on getting them healthy and strong and ready to go home. And so one of his other things was eating. He had to eat a little bit more. And so once we knew he was eating enough and his calcium was safe, in a safe range, and his potassium was in a safe range, they let us talk about going home. So that was the best feeling in the world, because leaving the hospital every night without your baby and your baby stays there is terrible. It's just a hard, hard feeling.
So if you could describe that feeling for somebody, you know, and I'll be honest, I have 2 girls. I've never had to leave without them. So for somebody that hasn't experienced that, what's it like? I mean, I'm assuming, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, it would kind of feel like a loss, right? Like, you know, your baby's alive, but you're coming home empty handed. How would you describe that feeling?
So it's this constant fear of worry that even though those NICU nurses are some of the best nurses in the world, in my opinion, even though they are amazing and you know they are going to take care of your baby, you have to bundle him up, give him a kiss on his head, and lay him down. And it is this feeling of sorrow. You're walking out of there. You're leaving pumped milk behind because, you know, you got to pump the milk and you bring it in the morning and you pump while you're there and you leave it there for them. And then you leave. And then you go home and your house is quiet and you don't have anybody waking you up in the middle of the night. But you know that, but your body says, you know, your body says, hey, something's wrong. Where's the a creature that you just, you know, expelled that right. should be laying on your chest? Where's this baby? Where is it? And so it's almost a physical ache and longing.
And I know I've talked to other moms that, you know, maybe didn't go full term and just experienced a loss. And they said, it's not fair because your body knows that you did everything to have this baby. And then you go home and your body is still a constant reminder that you did have a baby, but the baby's not here. You know,
you're sore. You're sore. You're dealing with all the post-pregnancy things that your body deals with. You're still up nursing every 3 hours. You're still up pumping every 3 hours. But it's an almost indescribable feeling. It's the closest I can think is emotionally a sorrow and a physical ache and longing. And then the next morning when you go up to the NICU and you get to slide him back in your arms, all of a sudden you're like, okay, I feel a little better. Everything's okay right now because, you know, I've got his warm little body attached to me and we're going to nurse and we're going to have some normalcy.
Yeah. In this moment, life is okay.
And all you want to do is just sit there all day and all night and hold that baby. But they will make you go eat. I will warn other NICU moms, those nurses, they will make you take care of yourself. They will make you drink water and go use the restroom. They will make you take a walk. They will make you go eat. They will, you know, when your head starts to nod and you start to feel tired, they will tell you to go home and sleep because you're going to have a long road ahead of you of a newborn once you, you know, do get released. So go enjoy the rest while you can, because you need it. And I think the NICU nurses kicking me out every night, they were very kind, but they're like, you have another kiddo at home. Go spend some time with them. Go eat a good dinner. We've got this. I was just going to say, and even though it was really hard and I was not happy that they made me leave, it was the best thing they could have done.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. I know in my book I talk about that, is the hospital might be the last place where you can finally truly take care of yourself and heal before you meet the demands of your baby. And I know so many moms feel guilty, like, just get me out of here. Just get us out of here. And, you know, in my book, I talk about how it's so important for the, you know, labor and delivery nurses to encourage self-care in the hospital, because what moms might not realize in the moment is this might be your last opportunity to truly prioritize yourself and to really take advantage of that. And I want to be mindful of your time. I know I told you about 30 minutes. So can I ask you kind of three last questions I want to ask all my guests that come on? Would be, what was most helpful or supportive for you during that time?
So for me, the most helpful thing was having confidence in the medical team at the hospital, having a husband that really stepped up and took care of things at home so I could focus on what I needed to focus on. And for me, my faith that everything was going to be okay. Those were the things that really got me through. I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have that belief, like we talked about at the beginning, that he is supposed to be here. He's supposed to be here. If I didn't have the supportive friends and family, and for me, having that trust in the nurses that even it's going to be okay, and they're going to take care of it and take care of me as well. Those were things that were instrumental to getting through that time.
And then what would you say? So I know he's a little bit older now, but you're still considered, you know, postpartum period. What do you do today to continue to take care of yourself? So not your baby, because there's a slew of things, you know, you can Google on the internet how to take care of your baby. What do you do now to still take care of yourself as a new mama and a mama of two?
So one of the things, taking a daily shower. I know it sounds silly, but with my first, I felt like I had to be there every second and like If she cried when I was in the shower, I couldn't take a shower. I needed to be there to hold her. This time, if he cries, he can cry for 15 minutes with daddy. I need to take a shower. I need to let myself have those moments. And the other thing is just, it sounds silly. I love to grocery shop. My kids don't like grocery shopping. So for me, I try to at least once a month drop my kids off at grandma's and I get myself a coffee and I go grocery shop and I buy myself a lunch. And it's just, I know it sounds silly, but I enjoy grocery shopping. So for me, that's very pleasurable. Okay. I grocery shop and I just leave the kids, which I really struggled to do with my first. I leave the kids for a couple hours at grandma's and I just go walk around Costco or whatever grocery store, slowly looking at labels, finding new things. And I feel just that at little errand for me.
At your own pace, right?
Yes. Not trying to like rush and like, okay, what are the 10 things we need to get through the next 2 days? And so that's hugely different. I didn't do that with my first. I didn't do either of those things with my first. And I wish I would have. And taking that 15 minutes a day to myself to just go take a nice hot shower and not worry about what's going on the other side of the bathroom door.
Yeah. Yeah. And I encourage that. I mean, you know, I talk about it and I tell you, like, you have to change your underwear every day. If you can't take a shower, you have to at least wash your face. And if you don't want to get into, you know, I'm not asking you to get into a new nice outfit, but you have to at least change into a different pair of leggings. You know, they just have to be different. You don't have to get a nice outfit on, but you have to change your clothes every day. And some people are like, why would you give that advice? But for our mamas that are completely drained or focused on their baby, those are things they truthfully don't do for days on end. And it's so important. And so last thing, what advice would you give a listener?
Oh, goodness. What advice would I give a listener? Listen to your body. Your body will tell you a lot of things. And so often, I think as an autoimmune mom, that's why this is my advice. Listen to your body. You know when something's right and you know when something's wrong. And don't feel bad about calling your doctor and saying, I don't feel right. Because I think if I would not have pushed the I don't feel right, something is wrong, I don't know what the outcome would have been. I don't know how much longer my body could have sustained that pregnancy. But but not being afraid to call my doctor and say, something is wrong, I don't feel well, was incredibly important in my situation. And so trust your mama gut. Trust when something doesn't feel right. Just don't get that guilt and that anxiety about, oh, I don't want to bother the doctor. Call. Maybe a nurse can see you. Maybe one of their practice partners can see you. Maybe it can just reassure you, but your anxiety will not go away if you just ignore that feeling of something being wrong. Follow up on it. Follow it through.
Would you say it's also important then before, like, you find out you're pregnant, would you say for somebody, maybe in any mom really, but somebody specifically with an autoimmune disorder, to make sure you have like a good connection with your OB, to make sure that they are going to, you know, respect when you're saying, I'm listening to my body versus being dismissive? I think probably at the very beginning, if you get any vibes that maybe they're dismissive or kind of,
you know, absolutely.
You know, does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yes. I think having that connection with your doctor and trusting your doctor, it's not going to be successful for your mental health or potentially your physical health or your babies if you don't trust your doctor. So finding a doctor that you connect with, that you think listens to you, and that, you know, you can really, really trust, because it's going to be one of the most stressful times in your entire life. So not trusting your medical professionals is not going to be helpful at all. So knowing that you trust that doctor with your life and your child's is incredibly important.
Sure. Absolutely. And Katrina, I just thank you. I mean, we talked last week about your story and it gave me goosebumps then, and it gave me goosebumps today. And I'm just so thankful for you, thankful for your honesty, your vulnerability. And I'm hoping if there's a mom out there that maybe even hasn't experienced this yet or recently experienced it, that there is some hope there. And I'm hoping that's what the purpose of this book was. It was the purpose of the podcast. So I'm truly thankful for you as a mom and as a friend, because, you know, I don't know what I would do without your cupcakes, right? So thank you so much. And
yes.
I know we've talked about having you on again to kind of talk about your experience with your daughter, your firstborn, because I know that that was different and that kind of brought on different things, especially as it related to mental health. So if you would be willing, we'd love to have you back. And thank you. I appreciate it so much.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.